Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour, and today we're preparing for earnings season with two of the most experienced in the business, Gaurav Sodhi and James Carlisle from Intelligent Investor. Gaurav and James have seen many, many reporting seasons, and they're here to tell us how best to prepare for what's to come in 2018. So guys, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Gemma.
Pleasure.
So I'm going to start asking you questions independently. Gaurav, February reporting season, it's just about upon us. Can you explain in simple terms what reporting season is? So what does it mean? What are investors looking for? What's actually going to happen?
Well, part of the deal for a company to be listed on the ASX, it has to twice a year report to its army of shareholders how that business is progressing. So it has to release specific financial accounts for the previous 6 months or the previous 12 months. And so reporting season comes around February and August, and at those times of the year, most companies, are forced to produce their financial accounts. And it's really a chance for investors to get and look under the hood about what's happening in those businesses and to get updated with the financial numbers that the companies are producing. So it's an important time of year if you're a shareholder. Mm-hmm. It's an important time of year for a potential investment, because there's only twice a year we get to see these numbers, and every time we see them, we use those numbers to update our investment cases. Mm-hmm. So it is important. It's always been important. But in recent years, I'd argue the period leading up to reporting season, you know, known as confession season, is probably even more important, mm-hmm. because there's new disclosure laws that make it incumbent on the business to report any big deviances from expectations. So a month or so before reporting season, you also get a really important period where companies have to tell you whether their results are going to be materially different to what they expected them to be. So there's sort of two periods we're interested in. There's the reporting numbers themselves, and there's the period before reporting numbers where we get changes to expectations, and both are equally important.
In that month before, you also get, so different sectors also produce other cash flow numbers, or for the fund managers, they produce their fund numbers, end of period fund numbers, funds under management, that is. Mm-hmm. And I think the miners produce their production numbers. And other companies produce cash results, you know. So you get the confessions, but you also get various numbers which feed into the results. which and some companies just update guidance because they've closed off the books. They know roughly what they're making, and so they just give people a bit of a heads up before they actually produce the formal numbers in reporting season. The one thing I was also going to add is that the reason it's February and August, of course, is because most companies have a June year end, and so it's December is the half year, and the end of June is the. Whereas the banks, for example, the most obvious ones, which have March. September year ends, so they report. So the reporting season for the banks is more May and November, but they're probably a special case.
And you can always tell the bank analysts in February and August, they're the ones with the relaxed looks on their faces.
Everyone else is looking very stressed.
That's right. CBA though is, so that's a year end, a normal June year end. So they mix it up.
Just to confuse everybody.
That's right.
Okay, so the next question I was going to ask you is, most people are familiar with the concept of continuous disclosure, right? And also many investors would be familiar with the efficient market hypothesis, this idea that once market information is available, it's immediately factored into the share price, and therefore you can get no spectacular advantage or disadvantage from that information. And then yet we worry about reporting season, it's a big deal, but you've pointed out that with people getting better at confessional period, maybe that's becoming more important for investors?
Well, yeah, I think information gets factored in, but it doesn't necessarily get factored in correctly. you know, that's the opportunity, I think, is, you know, you get information about what's going to happen to this year's earnings, and that can either concern you or not. You know, I mean, obviously it's not going to help if this year's earnings are going to be weaker than expected, but sometimes that's because a company is investing hard for the future, so that money might be coming out of this year's earnings. So Seek and TradeMe are examples which in the past past couple of years have produced maybe slightly weak earnings numbers because they've been spending a lot of money building their businesses for the future. Now, you know, the market may knock down the stocks because it says the earnings aren't where they'd like them to be. But if you've got a, if you allow yourself a slightly longer term focus, you can say that that might be a good thing for the businesses. And mm-hmm. so the information is there, but you can interpret it in different ways.
It's a really important point because a lot of investors will look at the bottom line when it comes to company earnings. And I often think the bottom line probably tells the least amount of information. The income statement, which produces the company's revenue and profit, is really a document, an accounting document rather than an economic document. And it comes with a whole host of accounting assumptions and laws that need to be followed. And it sometimes can deviate from reality. So there's a great opportunity every reporting season. We try and find businesses where the economic reality of the business differs from the accounting that's in the documents themselves. And there are lots of businesses that where those two worlds are completely different, even though they represent the same company. And so for that's one inefficiency that efficient market hypothesis doesn't quite capture, but it pops up again and again, and it's a reliable way to find opportunities.
So you've been through this many times, both of you, and done a great job of explaining what is going to happen and also some of the things that people should be aware of. How do retail investors best prepare for reporting season?
I think if you're any kind of investor, it doesn't matter whether you're a corporate, an institutional or a retail investor, the company you hold in your portfolio should come with an investment case. There needs to be a reason why you're holding a specific business in your portfolio. If there's not, then you might as well just buy an index. I think passive investing should be the default position for most investors, and if you're going to go active, you have to have a sensible investment case for everything you hold. In our portfolios, we have investment cases for everything. And reporting season is a chance for you to test your investment case against the oncoming reality. So that's what we do. We have expectations about how every company should be performing, what we expect to see before reporting season hits, and then we compare those expectations with the numbers the company releases, and we tweak our investment case or tweak our expectations after we have that information. So you, I think it's a mistake to go in blind and look at the numbers and then form an opinion. You have to form an opinion before the numbers come out and use the real data to inform your opinion or to alter your investment case. In, at the very least, is to judge how your investment case is traveling.
So I suppose I agree 100% with all of that. It's not necessarily that we have a strong view about where specific numbers are going to land up, but we want to see the composition of those numbers, where, you know, what's happening to costs as well as what's happening to revenues. So you can just see if your investment case is playing out. And so it's not a question of hanging off a particular earnings number, it's a question of understanding, and also the management commentary. You know, we like to see managements being candid and you know, open about their performance. And you can see that in the, you know, a lot of companies will have a webcast available to retail investors, and or transcripts get published online sometimes. And you know, those are very informative and tell you a lot about how the business is traveling, and little nuances about where they're investing, where they think their prospects are best, and you want to match that against your investment case. You should always be matching numbers, the performance of a company against your investment case. But the thing about reporting season is that's when you get this deluge of information, and so that's the best time to make sure. So ahead of that, you want to be clear as best you can with all your stocks. What you're expecting from them, where you hope them to be in 5 years' time, and then you can, you know, check that against what they're doing.
Actually, listening to that management commentary is really important, but it's also important not to get seduced by what management is telling you. And over the years, we've learned to listen to what's not being said as well, because we hear management commentary year in, year out, or every 6 months. You can almost draw a timeline or narrative of what management usually talks about, and if they stop talking about it or talk about something different, it can often be a trigger that strategy has changed, something's gone wrong, or at least something has changed. So rather than using those commentaries as just information pieces, we use those commentaries to build on one another and compare them from year to year to see what has changed, what they're talking about, what they're not talking about. And sometimes it's that change of tone, and BHP is a great example. You know, over the boom years, BHP's commentary was all about volume and all about growth, And that business invested terribly for years, and it looks as though they've learned their lesson, because their commentary now is all about return on assets, all about cash returns, and all about profit, not volume. Mm. So we want to see that kind of speech continue and that message continue. If it changes, then we can preempt a change in capital allocation as well.
That's really interesting. So the comment we were making earlier about how information is factored in to then drive a share price change. Clearly, market expectations will drive that share price change. You have no influence over that necessarily, but you can take advantage of it. Therefore, really important for investors not just to have an appreciation of what their future share price expectations are, but what the market is expecting. So how does a retail investor get a bit of a view of what the market's expecting, what analysts think?
Well, I guess the main thing there is broker expectations. And you can get consensus broker expectations for the earnings figure. You've got to be a little bit careful with that, because different brokers even will calculate the earnings per share figure differently than the company might. And so, you know, you might have a consensus expectation of 30 cents and the company might come out and report 32 cents and you think that's good, but then when you unpick it, it's actually 29 cents.
You're closer to
so you've got to be a little bit careful that you're looking, you're comparing apples with apples. But generally speaking, that earnings per share forecast is pretty key in terms of how the market's going to react. As I've said, as we both said, it's not necessarily key to the performance of the company, but if a company misses that earnings expectation, you can expect the share price to go down, and quite often just by the amount by which it misses.
Excellent. And so for someone who believes that is not indicative of the future prospects of that particular stock, bit of a buying
that provides opportunity. Well, potentially, that's what you want to be looking for. So even, you know, not just the stocks you own, but the stocks you would like to own, you want to be watching them as well and have an idea of a price that you might be prepared to pay. And, you know, for the stocks you don't own, but perhaps would like to, you want to see them missing those earnings numbers, but still be doing sensible things, missing them for, but yeah, well, that, and so, as I say, with someone like Trade Me, they're missing them because they're actually investing in their product.
There's plenty of ways to, the market is very short term in its view. And, it sometimes gets carried away with narratives. And so one thing we try and do is to look for negative narratives. So we were looking at mining stocks a couple of years ago when no one wanted to touch them. And the situation with miners has completely changed now. They're becoming, there's a really terrific narrative behind them. There's earnings momentum, there's higher commodity prices, there's global growth. All these things are now falling into line, but the share prices are so much higher that expectations now match reality. What you said is really key. The way to do well is actually to do something different to the market, but also to be right. It's very easy to be a contrarian, and it's very easy to be wrong, but the key to success is to be a contrarian and be right about it. And so getting both of those things right is really tricky.
It's no good being right about something if the market's also right about it. And we're, because you're just dealing with a high price then, and a high price might be deserved. But you really got to get into the, you've got to find some value somewhere. You've got to be doing something different from the market.
And so one of the tools we use is this search for a negative narrative. And on the flip side, we tend to avoid narratives that are really popular, really obvious, and really overplayed. So an example might be, there's a booming middle class in China, which I don't know if you've heard about, Jenna.
It's come up lots of times. You'd be surprised, actually. Every now and then someone mentioned it.
So Bitcoin is the classic one at the moment, isn't it? Every stock that does anything with Bitcoin goes up, that's right.
But there's an easy narrative there. You know, the Chinese are getting richer, they're buying more things. The problem with the narrative is that it tends to attract more capital, which tends to attract more competition. As a business, your profit is dictated not by your customer or by yourself. It's determined by your competitor. So the more competition in a space, the lower you should expect margins and returns to be. So narratives sound good and they drive share prices, but I think it's smarter to avoid the narrative because they also encourage competition and they crimp returns. That's why we tend to look for negative narratives, narratives that people aren't interested in, that they're avoiding, and that no one wants to invest in. A couple of years ago, we bought some really bombed out businesses that no one wanted to invest
South 32 in. was the obvious one, and I think no one was buying that when we were saying buy. And
it was actually.
But now the share price. I mean, everything's improved for that business, but the share price is up what four times since the bottom anyway. Yeah. So
when South 32 listed, it was called Crapco. I mean, no one wanted to touch it. There was another business we bought, which is called PMP, which is a printing business. Now, there's nothing sexy about printing.
Nothing sexy about printing.
There's companies aren't lining up to pour capital into the printing business. Mm. And that's a source of opportunity. It's not the only source, but it is a filter we use amongst many.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how these narratives develop. And in reporting season, you see it as much as anywhere because there's just that much more attention getting paid. Mm. And you get stocks, you know, when South 32 was Crapco, it was sort of unfashionable for any journalist or even analyst to come out there, stick their head out and say, this is actually quite good. This is actually, it's got good assets and it's pretty cheap. Mm. You know, you get your head chopped off for saying such ridiculous things as that. Whereas now everyone's falling over them, and you're the stupid one now if you say that it's actually too expensive, you know. Yeah. So these things, you know, they feed on themselves, and you can see. And so reporting season sometimes, you know, encourages that kind of, you know, the so-called good stocks get reported on positively, and so it can sort of exaggerate some of those movements, and can provide opportunities for that reason.
I think one of the best skills one can learn over reporting season is not necessarily financial aptitude, but mental resilience. You know, one way to beat the market is not necessarily to be wiser than the market, but to be more level-headed and less emotional than the market. And so
that is quite wise, though.
So psychological fortitude is probably, you know, you need some basic analytical skills, absolutely, but everyone works on becoming a better analyst. Mm. Very few investors work on the psychology side of things, and I think that's where we're probably a bit different. We spend a lot of time in that area.
Improving equanimity, I think, is that the word? Just you just got to be balanced, and you've got to be balanced in the face of good news and bad news. It's very, very easy, especially when your own money's on the line, and also for us, as you know, with a newsletter, putting our head, we stick our necks on the line, and we say, you know, this is a good stock. It comes out with bad news. Everyone's on you know, but you've got to meet all that in a very balanced way.
Mm. It's also a skill one needs to practice and practice and practice.
Yeah, it's hard. And if it wasn't hard, there wouldn't be value to be had. That's right.
So all of that's incredibly helpful, and I think for investors, particularly in a market like this where, you know, there's really high levels of exuberance, right? People are very enthusiastic about things they had no interest in 2 years ago, and plenty of new investors coming to market. We see a lot of new people trading and so on, very excited about some of the opportunities. For some of them, this might be their first reporting season. They'll be astonished by the deluge of information coming their way. How do you help people, or how do you suggest people cope with that volume of information and keep a level head?
For me, if you're a novice at this, then I think keeping the sheer volume of information under control is probably the largest challenge. Companies report on the same day. There can be dozens that report on the same day. Many report on the same week. There's a whole heap of information. There's a fallacy that all information is equally as good, and it's not true. We can only cope with a certain volume. So I would counsel that you probably need to target a handful of companies and just get to understand those really well. Focus on the results from those companies. It helps if they're in the same sector, because you get a bit of a sectorial view about what the competition is doing. But I think it would be a mistake to try and keep a handle on the entire market by yourself and to read every report and to try and be across everything. Be selective, and it's okay not to know everything about every business.
Yeah, I think you have a portfolio of whatever it is, for most people, somewhere between 15 and 25 stocks, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you have a watch list. Mm. And companies can move on and off that watch list, and that'll happen probably quite a bit during reporting season. Mm. You know, you might see something interesting from a company that you're not particularly paying attention to, and it moves onto the watch list, and vice versa. But I think you've got to be reasonably focused in having that watch list rather than just trying to sort of look at everything. You've got to, you'll learn a lot more if you have a narrow focus and really drill down into, you know, 10, 20 companies that you already know quite well, that you know what to expect from, and you know what the market's expecting, and you can really look at those reports. If you looking superficially at 50 stocks is not going to do you as well as looking really deeply at 10 or 15.
And it will be very tempting to, you know, you might be looking at a company and then all of a sudden a hot business with huge revenue growth and lots of enthusiasm reports. It can be very easy to switch focus and start chasing the shining object. You know, to be seduced by the hot company in the hot sector. That is the worst thing to do. You don't want to be buying the hottest company in the hottest sector. I think keeping your focus on where you intended to keep it, and not being distracted by all the noise of reporting season or by other people making more money than you are, is a really important and difficult skill to learn. We still find it difficult. We've been doing this job for decades between us, and we still find it difficult to ignore huge returns being made elsewhere.
You're not going to buy Bitcoin?
It's hard. It's hard to ignore those sort of returns, but part of the skill of being a good investor is to do exactly.
It's that equanimity. You've got to be happy to see other people make money. You don't need to. You don't need to join them.
The thing is, you can be sensible or you can be profitable. And if you're going to be sensible all the time, there are going to be times where you're not going to be super profitable. The only way to be profitable all the time is to do dumb things occasionally. And it's not something we counsel to do dumb things. I put buying Bitcoin squarely into that category.
Well, there's a tip for everybody right there, too.
Yeah. The other thing about focus is that it's important to understand what we've said before about being different from the market. So quite often, you know, your area of focus wants to be where you can see that it's not just about you getting something right, it's about the market getting something wrong. So you can see stocks, and if you can have a reason, if you see the arguments why a stock is being sold, and you can see that those arguments are wrong, or you've got
the
reason to believe they're different,
then that's
something to look at, you know. And if you can see everyone's all over a stock and you're not quite convinced that it's sustainable, then that's another reason to have a second thought about that one.
Yeah. TPG is a good example of that. We added that to our portfolios last year, and we bought in several tranches. There was just a wave of negativity about that business, even though there are several divisions. Only one part of that business is impacted by the NBN. There are lots of levers that business can pull. There was a solid investment case to be made, but it was just swamped by negativity. And there's always examples of that happening.
That's right. It was not fashionable last year to be writing articles about what a great company. Funnily enough, a year previously, share price had been up in the teens, it had been very fashionable to say what a wonderful stock TPG was, and everyone was, you know, and these things they go in phases, and you can see that negativity feeding into the share price. And if you can look at that negativity and say, well, actually, that only impacts half the group's earnings, and there are opportunities to do this, and, you know, there's a smart man in charge, you know, then that's all, you know, can provide an opportunity.
So, guys, thank you so much. I think that's a brilliant insight and series of insights for people who are looking at this for the first time, or even if you've done it many, many times, very useful information. 1 minute each, what are you looking for this reporting season? Anyone you're excited about? Anyone you're worried about?
Well, we had positions in miners from a couple of years ago, and we've recently sold South 32. We still hold a couple of mining businesses in our portfolios. There's been a monumental shift in the way that management look at miners. They've gone from a focus on volume to a focus on profit. So capital allocation, I'm less interested in the profit number of miners and more interested in how large the free cash flow is, and more importantly, how they're spending that money. I think we have to get over this idea that the most important number in reporting season is the profit number. I mean, I said earlier, I don't think that's the case. And nothing exemplifies that more than miners. So what we're watching is free cash flow and where is it going. Those two things will drive valuations, and they'll drive what happens further down the mining industry in terms of services and commodity prices.
It's a really good example of how different sectors are looked at differently, yes, because in technology we don't worry about profit at all. Completely irrelevant.
That's right. That's right.
James, your thoughts? What are you looking for?
Well, I guess it maybe reflects the market, but most of the ones that I'm looking at are pretty highly priced. Computer shares, one we've recently said sell, in fact. Mm-hmm. It's slightly higher, about 1680. We recommended selling that. Its share price has been remarkable. It's up 60-odd% in the last bit over a year, I think. Mainly because its mortgage services business in the UK is sort of beginning to churn out. They're getting the revenue from that a little bit perhaps sooner than expected. Mm. Cost cutting is going ahead as planned, but they upgraded earnings towards the end of last year, saying that corporate actions revenue was improving. And that's really the key to it, because investors are seeing interest rates. They make money, Computershare, from holding client cash balances, so they make the interest off that. Mm. But they hold particularly large amounts of cash for corporate due to corporate transactions taking place. So really, they need the corporate actions and the interest rates to sort of coincide, and people are beginning to bet on that. But I suppose it'll provide an opportunity. It was difficult. It's a good company, mm. Computershare, and it was difficult to let go. That's right. So it'll be an opportunity to re-examine that case.
Fantastic. Guys, thank you so much. Brilliant conversation, I think. Incredibly useful for our investors. If they'd like to learn anything more about what you have to say on any of these sorts of topics, where would they go?
So our website.
It's a good place to start.
intelligentinvestor.com.au. So that would. There's all our paid content, but we mm-hmm. also have a free section on there called Insights, which is so people can read all of that.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Gemma.
Pleasure.
If you'd like to get a 15-day free trial to InvestSmart, which features a great deal of the brilliant content from these guys and more, you can go to the Earnings Season Hub on NabTrade, which is nabtrade.com.au/earningsseason2018.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.